This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's Broadband Wireless Access World. We're about to speak to Paul Butcher, who's a marketing manager at the state and local government division of Intel Americas, Inc. Welcome to Utopia Media's Broadband Wireless Access World.
Thanks so much, Mark.
Maybe we could start if you by you giving us a little bit of background about the your responsibilities as marketing manager with the state and local government part of Intel Americas.
Yeah, so I guess I'd just start by saying that I'm actually in a public sector group within what we call solutions marketing at Intel.
Okay.
And effectively what my job is to look at this, if you will, vertical, state and local government, and work with the vertical to advance solutions or, if you will, movements that it might provide cause for the adoption of PCs in unique ways.
Okay, so essentially you're trying to encourage the wider deployment of broadband networks that will need digital devices at their endpoints.
Exactly, and that's one of the interesting things in this space is that broadband, and especially wireless broadband, not only represent an opportunity to use a PC, but also as a benefit in terms of a technology that will enable us to look at the way we live, work, or play, and hopefully actually give us back hours in a day.
Okay, so its ultimate goal is not really technological, but more human.
Exactly.
Tell us what Intel's Digital Communities Initiative is.
When we look at the Digital Communities Initiative, it's kind of a couple components that I would break it up into. One is the fact that we're focusing on a few places, and it comes with a very strong understanding of this concept that we can't boil the ocean. So we're focusing on a few places, our resources and the fellow travelers that are working with us on those places.
Okay.
The second aspect of this is getting the word out. This launch, for example, is a component of that.
Okay.
As well as some of the research that we're doing in these places and the white papers, if you will, that are getting out there. And the third aspect is fostering or encouraging other companies to do the same.
Okay. Which, if you can't boil the ocean, which ponds are you trying to boil?
So, from a worldwide perspective, there are 13.
Okay.
For the audience, for this show, I think we're America's focus. So.
Well, we're a global show.
Global? Okay. Yeah. So I'll just start off in the Americas.
Okay.
We're talking about Cleveland, Ohio.
Right.
Corpus Christi, Texas. Philadelphia.
Right.
Pennsylvania.
Right.
Portland, Oregon.
Right.
In Latin America, Magratiba, Brazil.
Right.
Area within the Rio de Janeiro state.
Right.
Principality of Monaco as we move over to Europe, Westminster, London, Dusseldorf, Germany, Győr, Hungary, Jerusalem, Israel, Seoul, Taipei, and Osaka, Japan.
Well, these are some important cities, aren't they?
Absolutely.
All of which could benefit from more communication within themselves and between themselves and other places.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I do like to point out is that just because we've identified 13 here,
right,
there are so many others that we're aware of and others that we're not aware of that are doing this. There are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of communities around the world that have a digital communities philosophy and are moving forward with solutions underneath the wireless cloud.
Okay, more specifically, in Cleveland, Corpus Christi, Portland, and Philadelphia, what exactly do you do as part of the, what does the Digital Communities Initiative involve Intel doing and the cities doing and other groups they're doing?
That focus part, right?
Right.
So I would just point to Corpus Christi as one example. Corpus Christi was moving forward with a wireless mesh network solution
right.
Without us in the beginning. And we recognize them as a visionary leader in this space and paid a call down there. And they were deploying this wireless mesh network as a way of addressing a need to do automated meter reading. We had a number of individuals going around the community reading meters on a monthly or bi-monthly basis. That was very costly and an inefficient use of human resources.
Right.
We could deploy those individuals in other places, like filling potholes or collecting garbage or some of the social programs that a community might have, reaching out to people. So they had justified this wireless network on the back, given the ROI, just out of automated meter reading. And what we did when we came in is we said, are you sure you want Intel to come? And they said, yeah, absolutely. And we kind of laid out a plan whereby we worked with some of what we call our fellow travelers, those companies that we work with day in and day out as we sell microprocessors and extend solutions out to and customers.
Now that would include Pronto Networks as one of those.
Pronto Networks, Atropos, Alvarian, SAP, IBM, Cisco, Dell, and the list goes on.
Okay, now what's the relationship among those companies? It's not sort of a joint venture. Is it kind of a technical coalition, or how exactly do you interface with these other companies? What's the synergy, the structure for the synergy there?
Intel's in a unique position. Kind of rally the flag and let everyone, in this case, around state and local government arena, know that there's an opportunity here, an opportunity that can't be addressed by any one company, even Intel, that if we really want to look at the business opportunities and help this market explode, if you will, that we need to go about it together.
Is Intel essentially the main point of contact, or do you just sort of come in and facilitate contacts with the individual companies, or how does that work structurally, practically?
It can be very fun. Practically what happened with Corpus Christi is right around December of last year, we had a meeting at Christus Healthcare, and we had invited a number of the fellow travelers to come in. We spent a day talking about, just as companies, about the philosophy of digital communities, the fact that it was not a sales call. In other words, it was a marketing activity to see if we could generate interest in this area. And then the second day, we actually broke up individually with different representatives from the government, the local government there, Port Authority, the healthcare, Christus Healthcare, for example, the police department, the building inspectors, and the list goes on.
So it's kind of like a floating conference with practical implications.
That's a very good example.
Say briefly what you discussed when you talk about the philosophy of the Digital Communities Initiative as you present it to cities.
So the philosophy is one of which co-opetition, possibly, that there can be companies who may compete with one another, sitting down at the table, looking at providing solutions for a partner, a city, for example, or complementary. And so, for example, you would look at Pronto Networks, and Tropos, or Alvarian, very complementary, synergistic capabilities.
Right. Tell people a little bit about those other companies, Alvarian and Tropos. What do they bring to the table?
So Alvarian manufactures wireless broadband equipment for backhaul, and is also developing technology, WiMAX technology.
Right.
And then in terms of the primary or some of the first instances of that technology that we see coming out now, and as we actually get approved WiMAX form products in 2000, this next year, in Q1 of this next year, we're going to see that as a backhaul, maybe in a two-tiered network, if you will, providing backhaul to a mesh network on the edge. And that's where Tropos comes in.
Right.
Tropos is a mesh radio product that a community or a service provider or a service provider and a community in partnership can use to deliver broadband data connectivity to the edge or the PC, as we say.
Right. So essentially, a mesh network can be built using the Tropos radios, which go around and can be put in, can be started in one place and then mesh their way out like a crawling vine to other areas. And then Alvarian provides WiMAX based backhaul from those Tropos radios to the net itself. Is that about
right.
How it works?
One possible way of thinking about this is kind of the evolution of radio technology or standards-based radio technology.
Right.
Most folks are familiar with a standard access point, say, from a Cisco or a Linksys or a D-Link.
Right.
And it's a very much a line-of-sight technology. Its range is limited to about 300 feet, and it was designed for indoor use.
Right.
As we think about mesh technology, it's different in that because of standards-based, there have been a number of not only companies, but engineers around the world trying to improve upon the standard 802.11 technology. And they've come up with this mesh technology, if you will. And it has some enhancements, namely that you don't need backhaul to every single access point or node, if you will.
Right.
There's a routing capability intelligently built into cell areas, if you will, around these mesh radios. And so you might only need one backhaul to every 5 or 10 or more nodes, if you will.
Right. How does MIMO fit into this, if it does, as a way of enhancing the Wi-Fi capability?
I don't know.
Okay. It's widely touted as Wi-Fi on steroids, and I'm just wondering whether it could also figure into these plans.
Yeah, I'll have to let you know. I'm not familiar with it.
And, okay. Well, we've got a website about it. I'll send you the link.
Great. I was gonna go with this in the direction of WiMAX.
Right.
Really, how it was designed for outdoor use from the get-go, and as such, it's a nice way of providing backhaul either to buildings or obviously to some of these mesh nodes that are out there. And there are other technologies as well. Motorola Canopy, for example, is a good solution for this backhaul, as well as wireline technologies.
Did you work with Motorola and Canopy sometimes? Or
On the digital communities, Motorola has not participated, but they're a good partner of Intel's.
Okay. And what can you say about the current state or future evolution in terms of WiMAX besides, as you're talking about now, for use in backhaul? Do you envision WiMAX as a direct-to-user technology at any point in the process?
Yeah, as we look out in time, in later 2006 or 2007, and we see 802.11e and whatnot coming down the line, that technology is being designed to be deployed out to the edge, as well as we see very viable uses for WiMAX radios in the Centrino out in time.
Okay, so essentially WiMAX now is principally being employed as a backhaul for Tropos and other mesh Wi-Fi networks, but you envision somewhat further down the line it'll be available to edge users.
Yeah, so fixed wireless in the near future is one of the ways that we've heard WiMAX talk about in the next year or two. And then as we move out in time, WiMAX changes.
Right.
It becomes more of a mobile capability that you kind of take with you that's portable and moves around with you.
How does that compare with what EVDO is doing now?
Well, I think it's important that as we look at all the various wireless technology, EVDO, WinXRTT, and whatnot, that no technology is stagnant, and they're all progressing. I've heard some folks talk about EVDO, Edge, 1XRTT, and whatnot as technologies that were predominantly conceived of initially as voice.
And right.
I need to also state that this is what I've heard.
Right.
I think that is one way of looking at those technologies.
Whereas WiMAX is pretty much is data, although it can carry voice over IP, it's data configured.
It is from the get-go, it's been designed to carry data,
right,
and not necessarily voice.
So right.
I think it's important to realize a couple things here. One, that they have different objectives from the get-go. Two, no technology is stagnant. They're all moving forward and getting better as we go. And that pretty much leads you to a place where you can conceive of that there's room for many different types of technologies, wireless, wireline, and whatnot, to solve the dilemmas that we face as we look at bringing broadband and voice to individuals.
Okay, I think we've pretty much covered the technical aspects of what we're talking about. I want to switch to the economic and political. Maybe we could start by talking about Philadelphia. What's Intel's involvement and the digital community's involvement in Philadelphia, which is of course at the moment leading the way on in terms of size and notoriety of its Wi-Fi initiative,
right?
Its wireless initiative.
So Mayor Street and Diana Neff are wonderful people, and Intel from the very beginning recognized that these two individuals and the entire city, in fact, and the administration there, are visionaries. And so we came in from the very beginning and facilitated relationships with other companies. We provided information on technologies, as well as just basic support for the projects that they were doing there.
And an important part of the Philadelphia story, if I use that phrase, was the effort of Verizon to legislate them out of existence. Was Intel involved on any level in that particular political dust-up?
We did not participate in any of the political deliberations, if you will, on
right.
House Bill 30 there in Pennsylvania.
Right.
We did, a bit after that, come up with a policy,
right.
Communications policy, and we set that forth in Texas with House Bill 789 there.
Okay.
And worked through a number of technology alliances to let it be known our position.
Tell us what Intel's position is about municipal broadband.
It's four parts, see if I can recall all four parts.
Okay.
The first one is that broadband is good.
Right.
Affordable broadband is better, is the second one.
Right.
And that there's really not enough broadband, at least United States, available for folks.
Digress for a second. What's the U.S. competitive position in terms of broadband deployment?
That depends. You know, if you look at some of the FCC reports, they suggest that we're doing fairly well. Of course, they're saying that our broadband rates start around the 200 kilobits per second rate. If you look at some of the folks that dissent, and I would point, for example, to the Broadband Reality Check paper that I just picked up about a week ago by Derek Turner. Very interesting commentary on really the state of broadband penetration in the United States, pointing to you know, the cost of broadband here in the United States being more than in other places.
It's a little like prescription drugs, huh?
Yeah, that might be one way. I don't know if I...
You don't have to get into that.
Yeah. Can I steer clear of that one?
There's just an analogy there somehow.
Yeah. But if I move on maybe to the third point
right.
on Intel's position here,
right.
that is really that any state or federal mandate or legislation really cannot comprehend all the needs of a local community. They're just too vast to really comprehend in a global restrictive legislation, actually.
Right.
So that would be the third one. The fourth one really has to do with the fact that communities can move forward individually on their own as long as they're moving forward in an open, transparent process, similar to like an RFP process and
right.
whatnot, where and they're very good at doing this. And in doing so, that opens them up to working in tandem or in partnership with service providers who, by the way, happen to have a certain core competencies such as customer support and the maintenance and ongoing care and feeding of a network.
So to the extent that you have a position on that, you like mixed use or public-private partnerships or that kind of arrangement, or do you have any views on a municipality or a utility doing everything itself?
Again, it gets back to that point on you can't make up a blanket rule for everywhere. It is true that service providers have core capabilities, and therefore you would tend to believe, and I tend to believe, frankly, that public-private partnerships make sense. But there are places where a service provider might not be able to step up to the table and help a community. In those cases, because broadband is so important, you would want to enable the community to move forward in, let's say, a utility model or whatever would be right for them.
Okay. Now, to a certain extent, there's a term called cable overbuilders for people who bring in companies that bring in wired access to communities that already have cable and presumably telephone service as well. What we're talking about here is, in a way, is a wireless overbuild in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I wanted to get the Intel's philosophy on the rights and responsibilities of municipalities in doing that, and the responsibilities or authority of private companies, incumbent carriers, cable companies, and telcos, to limit the competition from an overbuild, whether it's a public-private partnership or a municipality working by itself.
You know, we're going to have to come back to this. The one thing that really jumps out at me that I do want to start off with,
right,
is that most of the broadband deployments today are wireless. And when you talk about overbuild, the thing that strikes me is that, yeah, there may be broadband in a community wireline to business and residential locations.
Right.
That broadband capability does not go with an individual when they leave their home and drive to the donut shop in the morning or to drop their child off at school, stop by the office, and then go to the grocery store.
So it's not ubiquitous.
It's not ubiquitous, and it's not portable or mobile, if you will.
Right.
It doesn't enable mobile use of data, broadband data.
And you're saying people need access to data both when they're stationary in their home or business and when they're mobile.
Absolutely. And, you know, we talk about a couple different areas here. One is the mobile worker,
right,
obviously. Another one is first responders,
right,
in the space. And the ROI is largely different in the space because we're talking about lives saved or public safety. Third category could be looked at as device monitoring and control, parking meters or water mains and whatnot.
Or surveillance cameras.
Or surveillance cameras, very good example. We also talk about telco infrastructure cost and the ability to extend a broadband line to an office that might have been using a T1 line, for example.
Right.
And the ability to do that more affordably using some of the infrastructure communities are putting up. Then you start looking at the community, businesses, and citizens being able to use the broadband for the very same way, very same reason. So as a parent, being able to communicate with your child's teacher or download your child's homework assignment for that night before you leave town, and maybe you need to stop off and pick up some supplies before you leave town and go home, if you're in circumstances similar to mine, or consult with the teacher over a broadband connection.
Wherever you are and wherever the teacher is.
Exactly.
Do you see then that the wireline with cable and telephone companies as complementary to Wi-Fi clouds in cities?
Absolutely complementary. There's room for both, and there's a need for both. So as you look at wireless, and let's say some of the richer applications, such as media, that you might want to extend, it's reasonable to look out in the next couple of years and realize that wireless, even when we're talking, you know, some of the early instances of these mesh networks that are going up, there are instances of streaming video over them, but really when we're talking a megabit or 2 megabit per second, video streaming, media, and whatnot is best shared over a bigger pipe.
And so, in fact, and just in terms of the sociology of it, people rather watch movies in the comfort of their home rather than on the bus or maybe a little in the park. But putting the really bandwidth intensive applications, media delivery is pretty much something that for the foreseeable future is going to be a wireline function.
Right.
Okay. In addition to ubiquity, there's also the question of universality and the question of the digital divide. What's Intel's take on that, and how does the Digital Communities Initiative relate to reducing or eliminating the digital divide?
Hey, this is one of the reasons for those of us who are focused on this area, we really feel good about our jobs. by the very fact of consuming or using technology, we are deepening or extending the digital divide. You, I, as consumers, and technology companies as purveyors of these capabilities. And I would give you a really good example. My son, towards the end of the school year here recently, had to prepare a debate on gun rights.
Right.
Within 10 minutes, he had been able to go up to Google and search on the issues, the debate issues on both sides, and download about 40 reasons on either side, and spent the rest of the day, the afternoon, preparing for his debate.
Instead of spending a week in the going from library to library.
Exactly. Another student, let's say maybe in the migrant camp down the road from where we live, no broadband connectivity, no computer in the home, has no way of fairly competing with my son in the classroom for the next day. Now, so as we look at digital communities, what we are really seeing is a private sector who's motivated by return and the stockholder, and the elected official who's motivated, or the public official who's motivated by making sure that there's equal representation to all citizens, coming together, teaming together to solve some of these problems. And it's not that we're going to solve world hunger. It's not that we're going to fix the issue for everybody. But what we are starting to see is companies working with the public official to address some of these issues for folks who are on the other side of the digital divide.
Because there are essentially two aspects of that. One that's kind of taken for granted by now, but is that how the Internet speeds everything up. Obviously, your son being able to do all a week's worth of research in 20 minutes enables the process. If all of the students had that capability, it would then allow the debate to go forward that much faster, and then decisions to be made and so on, so that the rate of communication and dissemination of information and consideration of the information and decisions based on that can all be accelerated. But on the other hand, it depends on everyone being able to participate, which is what the issue
exactly.
You raised.
Yep.
Okay. Why don't we wrap up with a little more talking about legislation that's present or past and coming up in the future that deals with this. There's been I had an interview with an attorney in the telecommunications field a few days ago talking about the fact that efforts at the state level to limit municipal broadband have essentially run into a brick wall, and therefore the action has moved to Washington, where there are a number of bills pending, including H.R. 2726 from Representative Sessions of Texas, mm-hmm. and a bill by Senators McCain and Lautenberg to legitimize and say that municipal broadband is legal, and sort of the overall bill from Senator Ensign in Nevada, which is more or less a rewrite, contemplates a rewrite of the Telecommunications Act of 1996. What's Intel's view on how those issues ought to be resolved in Washington?
I guess I would start off by saying that Intel has come out publicly in support of the McCain-Lautenberg bill.
Right.
We believe that it is moving in the right direction. Now, having said that, I do trust in our governmental process to look at this, and you look at some of the great debates over time, and you got to believe that they're spending a due amount of time on this process. But how it's going to happen and when it's going to happen and what's going to be decided, I think, get out your crystal ball.
Well, are you confident that the municipalities are going to have the ability to move forward in all of the promising technical and administrative dimensions we've been talking about?
Here's the interesting thing about technology. It always moves more quickly than our ability to legislate rules around it.
That's right.
The other concept here is one of grassroots. And to realize that the municipal wireless phenomena really is a paradigm shift, brought about because there's technology, standards-based technology, that's making it affordable to put forth solutions that answer the needs of communities, right, that have never been possible before.
Right.
So not only is technology playing a role in this, but also communities by the hundreds, if not thousands, are moving forward in this direction. That's a powerful combination, and no elected official or company should ever underestimate the power of such a grassroots movement when their benefits are so huge.
So essentially you're talking about the synergy between the advancing technology and the emerging community movements.
Yep. Exactly.
If I could use the term paradigm shift, if I can give some credit to co-founder of Intel, Andy Grove, who talked about inflection points, do you see upcoming inflection points in this process?
Well, I think we're in it right now. I think there is an inflection point that is just almost in front of us. Some of us have referred to it as the land rush, if you will.
Right.
I wouldn't want to... speculate that we're going to have just stupid investing, if you will.
Right.
I think we've been through that before, and companies and venture capitalists, investment folks are much more intelligent this time around. But I do believe that there are a number of service providers out there that are starting to not only listen to, but actively work with communities in public-private partnership ways, and that when this starts happening, when you look at Philadelphia and the fact that they're working with Earthlink and HP right now and moving forward in ways with them, when you look at the city of Portland, when you look at San Francisco and a number of other places around the country, major metropolitan areas that are starting to talk with service providers and open the doors consideration. Once a few of those deals, if you will, land,
right,
networks start to get built, maybe this land rush will start to happen.
In fact, what we're talking about is a paradigm shift of public-private cooperation, grassroots movements combining with technology companies to create solutions that work for everybody, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. And one of the interesting things that's happening here is that communities are looking to have a seat at the table for the long term here, an equal say in the price of broadband, the type of technology that is provided to folks, and the places that it's being distributed to within their community. So that's kind of the partnership angle here.
And overall, to wrap up here, how hopeful are you that this is going to work out?
Very hopeful, but it goes beyond hope. There's a number of things happening, or road marks, if you will, that we're seeing happen in this area that lead me and many folks to believe that it is happening.
Okay, and what would you recommend to our listeners who are residents of municipalities? What are some of the effective things they might be able to do to move the process forward?
It seems to me that the visionary communities that are moving forward are the ones with public officials, elected officials, who understand the vision and want to make it happen. So the best way to promote your community and moving forward is to work with an elected official, to work with administration folks in that may be at City Hall, or the county or state level, and have buy-in at the top level.
Okay, buy-in at the top level. Could people get in touch with digital communities as a contact point? And can digital, if they want to bring in the digital community presence to their municipality, are there ways for them to do that?
Yeah, so I guess I would start by having folks go to one of our websites.
Give us the URL.
www.intel.com/go/digital-communities.
So essentially they can get more information for themselves, and they can send their elected officials there as well.
Absolutely.
Okay. And, of course, they'll want to listen to this interview.
Of course.
So I want to thank you for helping us to produce it by providing most of the input, and I look forward to talking to you in the future as the process expands and deepens, and we're able to use the platforms that are built this way to spread even more information about how the platforms work and the content that can go on them.
Thank you so much for the time, Mark.
Thank you. Bye.